Hello there and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 16th of August. I'm Maddie Playle and this week I'm joined by James Stevens and Mark Boylan, and it's going to be a cracking podcast we've got in store for you this week. First up, we're going to look back on the action this weekend, including the Great St Wilfrid at Ripon, really historical sprint handicap. And then there was Group 1 action in France on Sunday, including the Jacques Le Malouin, which was won in astonishing style, really, by Palace Pier, the first horse in many years to go back to back. And, of course, this week, one of the best festivals in the flat season, the York Ebor Festival, gets underway on Wednesday. We're going to take you through all of the big races and get some naps for you towards the end of the show, so stay tuned throughout. But without further ado, let's get straight on into it then. And as I mentioned, it was the William Hill Great St Wilfrid Handicap on Saturday at Ripon. And the race was won by Just Another Bottle for Kevin Stott and Kevin Ryan. This horse has been a regular in these sorts of events for some time now, and he capitalised on a declining handicap mark to win, James. But crucially, this race was dominated by those drawn towards the stand side.
Yeah, it was. And I think it was a fine example of first time blinkers making all the difference. It's all sort of been knocking on the door, had quite a few good runs, but that just change of almost a little tweak, and it's made a massive difference. And I suppose as well, they've got Kevin there who knows Ripon and that track so well, which can often, it's quite a quirky track, Ripon, so you need to sort of know it well and know a horse will handle it well. I think it's a combination of those sort of things that came into fruition on Saturday. It was a confident ride. You know, the draw always helps with something like this, but just everything went right. And a horse that has been, as we say, appearing in all the big handicaps, finding one or two too good at times, he's had his big day with everything going right. And look, this it isn't going to be a sort of group class horse, I don't think, in years to come. I think this is probably the level it is. But when you're winning a big Saturday handicap like this, that's all you can ask for. And fair play to the owners. Who knew you could do the Great St Wilfrid Grand Annual double in the season? That's not been done before, surely.
Yeah, I think that's got to be one of the first times that's happened. Mark, for you, does it ruin a race? We see it often at Royal Ascot where they split into groups, other races as well. Do you think it sort of ruins the spectacle when you've got horses coming from 19, 17, 18 and 20 filling the first four places?
Sure. It's not ideal, but I think ultimately, as a punter, if you're clued into that as an angle, you know, there are ways that you can use that to your benefit. Now, I didn't use it to my benefit here and finding him at 18-1. But you know, you could see from the previous, the silver race, that they came up the stand side, the winner did. I know there was a couple that maybe made their challenge towards the far side, but it looked to be handy in that respect. And I think down through the years, it seems to have been handy to come this side for this race. So, I mean, look, it's not ideal from a viewing point of view that you're spinning over and back, but you know, ultimately it's going to happen. And I think if you can factor that into your own calculations, it can be used to benefit. Because some of these races, I'm not saying you can blindly knock out, you know, five or six straight away because of draw, but you know, you see it at Ascot, as you pointed out, and there definitely is an angle there for people to. I think it's, from a spectacle point of view, yes, not ideal. But from a punting point of view, I actually find it handier when it's working out like that to get a handle on exactly where it is, or to forgive a poor run even previously. Because in these races, like I often feel the first half of the race is just as important as the second half of the race with some of these horses when you're in this sort of grade. And then you factor in things like your ground preferences, your trip preferences, your track preferences. And, you know, if things are kind of falling right for a horse, but the draw has caught him out, you know, there are reasons there to mark up or mark down performances. So, I think it's a tool that you can use to your advantage if you're clued into it. But I'm not trying to say I'm a shrewdie here by any means in terms of finding that horse. But thought it was a smart performance, in fairness. And although he's won well and won like a well-handicapped horse, I'd echo what James said in terms of timing when Kevin Stott went for his run in terms of it being a good ride. Very easy to say a winning ride is a good ride, but I just thought he really had that horse bouncing in terms of exactly where he needed to be at the right time. Visually anyway, that's how it appeared.
Indeed. James, just going over to the headgear angle, you mentioned blinkers on for the first time. I know certain members of the Racing Post sort of workforce, they're not so keen on different types of headgear. Tom Siegel, for instance, hates hoods. What's your view on blinkers? It's always impossible to tell whether they're going to work second time, but would you be hopeful with a horse like Just Another Bottle, or do you think this may have been his moment?
I think, I can't remember when it was, Maddie, but I read it in the paper once, and they said the line, he's worked very well in blinkers, so we know they're going to work. So it's often not as much as a gamble as it's sort of as much of a sort of risk almost as it's once sort of claimed. You know, headgear does different things for different horses, and horses are sort of strange animals to train. And when they're these sort of handicappers that have been around for a while, it often is just those little things or the very different angles that the way you train them can just get that extra few lengths out of them. And that's sometimes all you're talking. And in these big sprint handicaps, you know, there's often only a few lengths separating first and seventh and a whole host of, you know, big prize money that's going to change the course of a trainer's, a jockey's and owner's season. So it's all these little things that are very important. And for me, I don't mind. I don't really have a view. I'm not in the anti-headgear brigade of some sort, I suppose. I like using it, and in the sense of I like using it to see how trainers use different types of headgear, when they use different types of headgear and the success they have with it. And some trainers will use it, you know, a lot better than others, and some trainers will use stepping up in distance better than others. It's just the way trainers approach a horse and approach racing. At the end of the day, there's so much that goes into a horse race. You know, there's so much we can read, there's so much we can unpick, you know, where's the pace coming from, the ground, everything, you know, we have. And there's different ways of approaching a race. But I think that if you're looking at the horse itself, that is the difference that could bring that horse from being, you know, running to a mark of 90 to maybe 95, you know, that's a huge difference. And I think you've got to be aware of it. And I mean, when you judge a race, you've got to take in every fact you can. It's impossible at times, but you've got to use all the information you can. And headgear is sometimes quite important to that.
Definitely. It was certainly important to Just Another Bottle, the seven-year-old who bounced back in Saturday's Great St. Wilfrid. Now, on Sunday, we had the Jacques Lamarwa, and it was dubbed as the big matchup between Palace Pier and Poetic Flair. Didn't happen at Goodwood in the Sussex Stakes, but it did here in Deauville. After the race, John Gosden, his co-trainer, said that the horse was only 80% fit after he won by just a neck from Poetic Flair. Frankie Dettori was saying he's the best miler he's ever ridden. And ultimately, Palace Pier joined Miesque and Spinning World as dual back-to-back winners of the Marwa. Lots to unpick here, and it was a thrilling contest first and foremost. What do you make of the claims that he was only 80% fit, Mark?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I actually think that, you know, ultimately, if you are 80% fit, you're probably going to be found out. But not mean to question John Gosden totally, but I would take that statement not literally maybe that he was 80% fit, but more so that the preparation hasn't been ticking every box that he wants to in the lead up to it. I wouldn't read it exactly as written or as spoken. While still respecting what John Gosden is saying, like, I mean, I think he said that he's 10 days short of what he wanted. That would mean a lot more to me in terms of what he's saying rather than being 80% fit, because, you know, you can get a horse fit, but getting a horse to be cherry ripe to win a Group 1 is a different matter again. So, you know, ultimately, this is a top, top class horse who seems to handle a variety of ground, who doesn't seem to be, you know, really impacted by how a race will pan out pace-wise, tactically. He's got it all, really. And I've tried to pick him apart in different ways previously. I would have had a lot of respect for him coming into his three-year-old season, but it's very hard to find fault in him. And I think, you know, you can go back and you can look at his run of the QE2 last year, and albeit he was very flat and he lost a shoe, you know, it maybe wasn't the best day that the Gosden camp had on Champions Day either at Ascot. And I'd be happy to just draw a line through it that we didn't see the very best of him that day for whatever reason. And other than that, he's pretty flawless. He's an exceptional talent. And, you know, ultimately, it's very hard to find fault with Anthony's going to do, because Poetic Flair, I thought it was a savage run. But you're looking at how is he going to turn it around with Poetic or with Palace Pier between now and then? Because if they meet, let's say, in a QE2 again, the ground probably going to be on the easy side, you'd imagine, just based on that time of year. That's going to put it more in Palace Pier's favour. You know, it's... he's just a very hard horse to beat, and he does as much as he needs to do, and you just don't know how much more is under the bonnet. I really find it hard to find fault with him after trying for quite a while.
Yeah, when I first watched this race, I watched it back this morning, I thought Poetic Flair looked very unlucky, really, because he was travelling really strongly, was then sort of asked to quicken very immediately by Kevin Manning, and then, of course, only just missed out staying on again at the line. Up in trip, Mark, would you go up in trip with either of them, or would you stick to the QE2?
I think it'd be exciting to see what Palace Pier could do over a mile and two, but I'd be more of the frame of mind, probably be boring, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And with Poetic Flair, I thought was very interesting during the week, Jim Bulger. Now, maybe there's an element of a stallion sales pitch in here, I don't know, but Jim was saying he was tempted by the July Cup for Poetic Flair, that he thought he had the gears for six. Now, you know, how he would have fared, I honestly don't know. The way he's finishing at the line would give you the impression that 10 wouldn't be a problem, but I still think a strongly run mile on rattling quick ground, I still think he that's where he's going to have the best chance of getting close to Palace Pier rather than 10 furlongs. And especially, again, if you're talking about the two of them, if they're at a clash in the Champion Stakes at Ascot, you know, if you're talking about a little bit of ease in the ground, I just would have a bit of a concern for Poetic Flair. Not that he doesn't handle it, but just he's just so much better on quick ground. I think if you're going to try Poetic Flair over 10, I'd love to see him in the Irish Champion Stakes. And what a race that might be. Like, obviously, we've had the news this morning about St. Mark's Basilica missing the Judmont International, looking at the Irish Champion Stakes. Imagine if we could look forward to Leopardstown on September 11th and we could be looking at Tarnawa, St. Mark's Basilica, Poetic Flair. That would be race of the season material for me. I would absolutely love to see it and love to find out in a real, real top-class race if Poetic Flair gets 10 furlongs. And Leopardstown, I think in all likelihood, you're going to get quicker ground there, aren't you? More likely than on Champions Day at Ascot. You know, if you were to get a foray at Longchamp where the ground was quick, I think 7 furlongs would be absolutely no problem for Poetic Flair. But there's so many options, and the ground is such a factor with him as to bring in his best. But I would just love to see him in the Champions Stakes at Leopardstown. That would be awesome.
And just quickly, before we go back to James, you talk about a stud career for Poetic Flair. Knowing Jim Bulger, knowing how he's campaigned him, do you think there's any chance we could see a classic winner like him return as a four-year-old?
I honestly don't know. I don't know. Like, he obviously takes his racing so well. Like, who's to say he wouldn't improve at more time? I honestly don't know. It's a funny one. Like, he's building up some CV. Like, he's a very, very valuable horse. I'm not quite sure. But, like, I mean, if you are talking about a stallion point of view, you'd have to say that his constitution, you know, from being able to take races and then toughness in finishes and, you know, just hardiness. Like, you'd have to say he's very, very attractive in that sense. So I'd imagine it would be tempting, but Jim is well able to pull an ace out of the pack every so often, so I'm not too sure exactly what would happen, but a nice problem to have.
Tough question that I aimed your way there. Palace Pier, he's an exceptionally good stallion prospect as well, don't forget, and perhaps if they were to get a 10 furlong Group 1 on his CV, that would make him an even more valuable commodity. Yeah, James, your view on these two exceptional milers?
Yeah, I have to say, a lot of what Mark was saying, I was agree with. I was impressed by Palace Pier. I mean, the 80% angle is an interesting one, because I think we always sort of query just what's 80%, what's 90%, what's 70% when these sort of numbers get thrown around. But either way, if he's not fully fit and he's had a, you know, not
do you think trainers should sort of have to clarify these things before the race? I mean, we saw it with Davin Menizia, didn't we? And before the hard week we've won for tonight, he was saying he used that magical number 80%. Do you think we should, you know, encourage trainers to tell the press and be very sort of explicit with how much work a horse has done beforehand?
No, because I think I'm not one for that, because I think then if Gosden had come out and said that, then we're suddenly going, well, Palace Pier's not going to win the race. You know, it opens up a box of worms, you know. I'm just not sure about it. I mean, what they do at home, what they do on their gallops, whether they're flying up the gallops or whether they're just average up the gallops, that's the same sort of thing to ask. You know, we don't sort of want to need to know the times of how they're doing and stuff like that. You know, how they do at home is just their business, I suppose. And it's not something I'd ever sort of want to press and know exactly how good their work was compared to this time last season or something like that. You know, what the trainers want to reveal is up to them, because at the end of the day, it's their horse, it's the owner's horse, it's their right. And I'm not one that's sort of particularly pushing for that. What I would say, though, is that regardless of the condition the horse was in, he clearly wasn't in top shape. So to go and win that race against a really rock solid horse, is a really impressive achievement for Palace Pier. You know, the race was sort of slowly run, not too slowly run, but it was certainly not to the race I think that he would have wanted it to be. But the way he quickens, you know, this, the way he sort of just in a matter of strides, I think there's a brilliant shot you can look back on from the French coverage, whereby just in a matter of strides, he's there with Order of Australia, a Breeders' Cup winner, and Poetic Flair, we've discussed, this awesome three-year-old, and just there, bang. And it was impressive the way he just continued to the line. And even though Poetic Flair is sort of coming back at him, he's still done enough. You know, maybe if he was 100%, let's say, he'd have pulled a couple of lengths clear, but he doesn't really need to at the end of the day. In terms of where I'd go forward, Palace Pier to me is the best miler in Britain, Ireland, probably Europe, possibly even the world. They don't need to change that, you know. Whether they win the Champion Stakes or the QE2, their two Group 1 race is worth a lot of money. I don't think it makes too much of a difference. The only difference would be commercially. But Poetic Flair definitely has to go for 10 furlong races now. You know, we know this horse can go out week in, week out. We know this horse would put a lot of pressure on the Irish Champion Stakes. I think he might even be a bit better, actually, because he was staying on quite strongly at the line. So that's the direction I'd go. And just on your final question to Mark, which was an awfully difficult one, what would they do next season? I think Jim Bolger should just sit and wait and see what Mr. O'Brien is doing with some of his best horses, because there's quite a few nice prizes around the world that he could pick up, Poetic Flair. We know he travels. We know he can take his racing. Early season, if he can get him out, there could be some big prize money to be won.
Indeed. I think all of us as racing fans would love to see Poetic Flair as well. We've seen him so often this season. He's really carved out a sort of audience, hasn't he?
And I just throw in there, Maddie, as well? Sorry to cut across you. The 80% line, it wouldn't get me hot or pot and bother, but just earlier this year when Palace Pier won at Sandown, the line from John Gosden afterwards was, it was a good performance. I'm very clear he was at 80%, but luckily nobody put it up to him today. That, you know, it's something that he said before. Even you go back to when Too Darn Hot ran the Dante. He said, we sent him to the Dante when he was quite frankly 80%. Frankie was trying to settle him back and ignore the pacemakers and he was there second, whatever. You know, it's a line that he has used before. So just, it's not something that it gets me particularly hot and bothered, but just to throw it out there for Pig Iron that he has actually referenced 80% specifically in the past.
It's the magic number, isn't it? Maybe we need to start digging and quantifying exactly what that means for whenever John Gosden pulls that out in future. Now, I missed a lot of the racing this weekend. I must admit, I've caught up on all the main events. But any horses for the notebook, please, lads? I want you to do a bit of my job for me here. I'll let you go first, Mark.
Oh, God. I thought in the Great St. Wilfrid, there was a good performance considering the draw bias that we're speaking, or draw preference, I suppose, we're going to speak about. I thought Manny Gordo, considering he came up the far side rail, he's a horse that has slipped down the handicap from his time, Richard Hannon. But there was a couple of little flashes of promise that I thought this season. I thought a second to Zarzini, who is a horse that probably has more upside to him as well at Redcar earlier in the year. Thought that was a very, very good effort. Now, maybe he's a little bit hot and cold. Maybe it's going to be hard to kind of catch him on the right day. But I just thought Manny Gordo, if he got similar circumstances to what he got in the Great St. Wilfrid, I would be interested in him going forward. Just look, he's run there off 85. It's not that he's going to be a superstar by any means, but I think there's a nice little handicap to be on with him somewhere along the way.
Perfect. And James, what about you?
Yeah, I think the race to watch back this weekend was the 152 at Doncaster on Saturday, which is a maiden. I think it was quite a good maiden, actually. A horse called Suspicious won it. Really, really impressive performance on debut, just sort of in the final furlong, just really quick and nicely to beat another nice horse of Godolphin's who probably go and win next time out. And then in fifth, I think there was a horse called Auntie Margaret, who was eye catcher. But the way Suspicious won that race, it sort of had me thinking about Oaks next season. It was quite impressive to see her do it. And I think they've discussed going to the Mayhill over a mile at Doncaster, which makes perfect sense since she's now a course and distance winner. And yeah, I think she'll be an interesting one to follow from one of the lesser meetings on a busy weekend.
Brilliant. I'll be jumping on to my racing post account to watch that race back very shortly. Now, big news this morning regarding the Judmont International Stakes, which takes place on Wednesday, the first day of the Ebor Festival. We're going to get stuck into that Group 1 and all the other significant races just after this.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. Now, as I mentioned, big news this morning, and that is that St Mark's Basilica, the top three-year-old colt who won the Prix de Jockey Club and the Coral Eclipse, is out of the Judmont International Stakes. The market has been reshuffled somewhat. I'll go through the best prices for you. We have Mishriff at 2-1, Love 11-4, Alcohol Free at 11-2, Mahartheth, who was unlucky, disappointing, whichever way you want to put it, at the track last time at 7s, Alan Kerr 14s, along with Max Winnie with Juan Alcano at 33-1. How does St Mark's Basilica's absence impact this race for you, James?
I think it's really disappointing. You know, we all want to see the best horses turn up for the best races. I think from a sort of betting angle and sort of punting angle, I think it now draws Love into the equation. Whether or not we'd have seen her before, we don't know. We never know what Mr. O'Brien thinks and such. But it now is a lot more of a fascinating race because it brings a lot more horses into the equation. You know, Alcohol Free, when she was put into the race, they sort of discussed, didn't they, when they put her in, saying, well, we've still got to beat St Mark's Basilica. And now suddenly they're looking at it thinking, right, this is a great chance. As we said, Love's in there. She's been, you know, a real superstar in the last 2 years. I think for me, it brings back Mahartheth. I'm keen to take another chance on him. It just all went against him last time at York in the York Stakes, which was probably a prep for this. I think he's improving. I think this is the sort of race that will suit him, you know. And yeah, he's looked like a proper Group One horse in the making prior to what happened last time. But yeah, what a race. And I suppose Mishriff is the one to beat now, but I'll be taking a chance on Mahartheth.
William Haggis with two really interesting three-year-olds in Mahartheth and Alan Kerr. I've always been a fan of the latter in particular. And then you go down the betting and you look at the Irish Guineas winner, Max Winnie for Jim Bolger. Can he spring another surprise, Mark?
Just, I think he'd probably want softer ground than it's likely going to be this week if he is. But I think this might be the trip that's going to bring out the best in him. Ultimately, he was good over a mile at the Corrib and he didn't seem to stay over a mile and a half in the two derbies. So I'd be willing to think that this could be, you know, kind of Goldilocks. This one is just right, this mile and a quarter, extended mile and a quarter at York. But just whether he'll get his ground is my concern. Like, it's unfortunate with St Mark's Basilica. Like, ultimately, it seems like a bit of a freak thing to happen in the sense that he's gone to do a bit of exercise at home and one shoe has come off from the front and made contact with the hind and it's developed into an infection that needs antibiotics. So it's not something that you hear every day of the week that's happening. But I think the market has got this wrong, to be quite honest. Like, ultimately, I saw this morning that they were going 5-2 about Mishriff and 6-4 Love. Like, that didn't seem right to me, to be quite honest. And even I think 2-1 Mishriff is still generous. Like, he's already beaten Love in the King George, for all that we don't know if we saw the very best of Love. And last year she looked exceptional, but I just wonder, you know, we begin to now kind of question a little bit more as to what her achievements really stacked up to be. For all that was all there in terms of style, the substance of what she was beating, you'd have to question a little bit now as time goes on. And for all that she was impressive in the Prince of Wales, tactically it was a race where Ryan Moore was exceptional, I thought. And I just wonder now, I mean, Mishriff, you get the sense that this has been his target for an awfully long time. I think even back when he was running in Saudi or out in Medan, I think it was even mentioned back then that the Judmont might be a target for later in the year. I was very, very heartened by what I saw at Ascot from him, and I think he'll take all the beating. I'd be shocked if Alcohol Free stayed. I really think it's ambitious, and I applaud Connections for having a crack. But, like, I really would be shocked. She's very, very buzzy, it seems. I would really, really have my doubts about her doing it. Mahafid is very interesting, and I think he has the ability to, you know, be better in a better race like this. But I don't know, maybe he'll need a Group 1 run like this to just put hairs in his chest with a view to the future. He might need the experience. But for me, Mishriff, he really, really is everything you want in terms of rock solid here.
Interesting. I like the three-year-old angle. I'm with you. I'm not sure Alcohol Free will necessarily stay the distance, but I think Mahartheth and even Alan Kerr being underestimated a little bit, they get that weight from their elders. So I think there could be a bit of a surprise in the Judmont International. That is at 3:35 at York on Wednesday. Let's go over to Thursday now and talk about the big feature, which is the Darley Yorkshire Oaks. And now that we know Love is going to go for the Judmont, this race seemingly is going to centre all around Snowfall and wonderful tonight that the mayor, who's 1 year older, or filly, I should say, both have had exceptional seasons, really. Snowfall has already shown that she loves this track. She won, of course, the Musidora prior to her spellbinding Oaks win at Epsom. Do you think this is going to be an easy task for her, James?
Certainly not if Wonderful Tonight is in there and gets conditions to, you know, in her favour. Whether that's going to happen, it's looking a bit unlikely. Snowfall is just really fascinating, isn't she? You know, she's won these two classics, you know, two Oaks, which we talk about racing. These are the absolute top draw of British and Irish horse racing. And she's just taken them apart. She's just romped home, and you're just sort of scratching your head. Was this a freak performance? Is this a monster? I don't think anyone really knows. You know, you sort of look at it and think, well, she could be anything. And we had this, I suppose, with Love last year, but Snowfall's done it to a different level. So with her, I'm just sort of sitting back and going, well, she's won so easily. I'm questioning what she's beaten. You know, that's how good she's looked. So, you know, on the one hand, she could still be something really special. I mean, she could go and repeat that performance and go a silly prize for the Ark. But I hope Wonderful Tonight turns up. I hope there is a little bit of rain about, just to ask that bit of a question. But on all known form, Snowfall looks like in a different league to anything else we've seen this season. So especially given the weight she's going to get in those bigger races. So you'd have to fancy her, you know, to win again. I wouldn't be punting on her just because I fear what might happen in a better race like this. Asharda is a horse I quite like. She's sort of open to progression. And I'd be interested to see whether she could nick a place. She looks progressive, and sometimes horses like that do well in this sort of race. So, yeah, I'm getting the Shadwell colours out, I think, for this week.
Okay, 5-4 currently Snowfall Love, we don't think it's going to run at 6-1. Wonderful Tonight 7-1. Asharda, James fancy at 10s. Loving Dream, the Ribblesdale winner at 12s, and it's 14-1 bar. Doesn't look like it could be a strong contest this, Mark, and on the weights and measures, Snowfall, well, she's rated higher than Wonderful Tonight, and that's without factoring into an allowance. Do you think that's accurate of what we're going to see on Thursday?
For a change, I won't keep you long. Snowfall should win, and Wonderful Tonight, unless there is a downpour, will have it all to do. And I'm not expecting a downpour, just looking at the forecast. As you mentioned, Love won't run if she's declared for the judgment. And, you know, £9 or whatever it is she's getting, you know, it's a very, very tall order for any filly to give her that. So Snowfall for me should take every bit of beating.
Nice and easy. On to Friday then, and the 2:25 is the Wetherby's Hamilton Lonsdale Cup, the Group 2. And we're hopefully going to see Stradivarius here, maybe take on Trushan. The matchup didn't happen at Goodwood, but again, the ground will be crucial when it comes to this race. What's your view on Stradivarius this season, James? Because you either seem to love him or hate him. I always try and take him on. I'd be trying to take him on here, but maybe that's not wise. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd be in the camp to take him on, I think. You know, we don't know the answer about how good he would have run at Ascot. It's still an unknown. Goodwood sort of, you know, the ground just went against him. We just go back to his run at Ascot at the start of the season where he did look as good as ever. So this is the day where we find out. And, you know, I hope he runs well. I hope he wins again because he's a wonderful horse. But from a betting perspective, I'd fancy taking him on with Spanish Mission, won the Yorkshire Cup at the start of the season, has looked like he's just got increasingly better this season. And yeah, he'd be the one I take him on. I also, you know, I know I've mentioned Shadwell, but Mandu, but a big price. I think he's another one to watch. Stepping up to 2 miles now, ran well in the Bahrain Trophy, and he's quite a big price considering he's the horse that's probably could be a star in the staying division in the years to come.
Indeed, I tipped Mandu before that Bahrain Trophy. I thought he ran a good race. I wasn't particularly unlucky, but didn't do his credentials any harm. And I know, again, to mention Tom Siegel, but he loves these three-year-olds and the weight they get in these races. So maybe want to keep an eye on Mandu. What about Lismore, Mark? Henry de Bromhead's filly. She came over to Sandown and sprung a surprise when winning the Henry II Stakes, the Group 3. What are the likelihood of her turning up here and running a bold race?
Honestly, don't know whether turning up. Have no indication as to whether she would or wouldn't. But I think, again, probably needs softer ground than she might encounter. For all that she won if memory serves me right, on quicker ground for Sir Mark Prescott around this time last year. But she seemed so effective with an ease in the ground at Sandown. You'd maybe have to question it. It was a performance I personally didn't see coming, hands up. She shaped okay at Cork and she ran more promisingly at Gorham, but there was a wide margin winner of that Mighty Blue, Joseph O'Brien's horse. And I was just questioning, really, was it job well done to get Black Type? And my God, that notion was blown out of the water the way she won last time at Sandown. She's been freshened up since, she will be staying on. She does handle the ground, but I'm just not sure if she's at this level of Stradivarius or Trushan, if either of those bring their best. To me, though, this is a race that kind of has a big no bet sign flagged up all over it. Stradivarius has been a horse that I've tried to take on for years that has proved very expensive to do so. And then just as I begin to kind of turn a corner and say, okay, maybe it's now his time to just appreciate it and to follow in with him, and it hasn't worked out. And, you know, ultimately, Frankie, I'm sure he would have done things differently again if he had his way in the Gold Cup, but I'm not sure. I don't think he would have beaten Subjectivist on the day. And, you know, ground-wise at Trushan, he's obviously so effective when he gets a cut, and whether he'll get it or not, I don't know. So to me, it just is, there's lots and lots of cautions all over this race, and I'll be happy to sit back and watch and learn something more with the staying division rather than get too involved.
The market is speaking in Stradivarius's favour at the moment, perhaps reflective of the forecast. He's a 5-4 chance. Trushan 11-4, 3-1-ish. Spanish Mission, James mentioned him at 7-2. Princess Zoe, another Irish raider, biggest price, 11s available. And bigger the rest. Let's go from long distance to short distance then. Also on Friday at York, we go to the 3:35, which is the Cornwall Wooden Bassett Nunthorpe Stakes over the 5 furlongs. And we have quite a surprising, I'd say, market leader here in many aspects, with Golden Pal for Wesley Ward, bought by Cornwall, presumably to run in this race. Sueza, who was so impressive in the King George at Goodwood, 5-2. Winter Power, who's been so exceptional over this course and distance this season, 6-1. Dragon Symbol's been dancing every dance he's going again at 7-1 and 16-1 bar. James, Golden Pal, I'm not sure I buy that he should be favourite for this. What's your view on it?
No, I agree with you on that. And it's interesting that the money has sort of come from, it seems. Wesley Ward, of course, saying this horse is the best he's ever trained, which is a huge statement given the horses he's had. And it's not the first time we've heard him knock out that phrase as well, to be fair, as we're talking about trainer's catchphrase. But look, I don't know my American form very well, but, you know, his run at Ascot last year behind the Learjet, he did look, you know, sort of like a real sort of one of those really bulky American sprinters that we see year after year from Wesley. How good he is, we just don't know. And that's why I wouldn't touch it. Sueza was seriously impressive at York. She, to me, I think we both agree, should be the favourite here. I wouldn't necessarily back her at this stage, just because sometimes with these sprinters, they might struggle to back it up. And as we say, there's still the angle of how good is Winter Power? How good is Golden Power? We don't quite know yet. If I had to have a bet in this race, which I probably wouldn't in all fairness, it'd probably be King's Lynn, actually. You do get the odd surprise in them. This is a horse who's been pretty decent all season. Really disappointing the last day. Before that, would look quite progressive. And like I say, this race can spring a surprise, and he's got the class to do it. It's just whether he can do it on the day.
Sueza getting the £3 from Golden Pal, and she's already rated £3 superior. So to me, it's quite straightforward. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh. James, keen to bring some other horses into it though, Mark. How do you think this one's going to play out tactically? Presumably Winter Power's going to go out there and make all. Do you think she'll get much competition for the lead?
She'll give Golden Pal a nice toe, and I think he'll go and do the business then. To be quite honest, this is the horse, I'd say, for all summer I've been really, really excited to see this fella over here in the Nunthorpe. I honestly think he's the real deal. Like, even I remember back when he was winning, I think it was at Saratoga last year, Wesley Ward was running a horse called Fauci. And I think the line he gave at the time was, you know, I'd be talking about Fauci as if he was the second coming of Jesus if I didn't train Golden Pal. You know, this Golden Pal, everything he does is absolutely, it's all class. You know, you look at what the performance he has, the horse's beat at halfway. And for all that Winter Power is very, very quick, and she will give him company, I just think this fella could be in a different league to the rest of them. You know, personally, Sueza was very impressive last time, but I'm not too sure if her body of form will stack up to the level that Golden Pal can run to if he's at his very best. It's obviously going to be a different test for him, but like, you know, Wesley Waugh is very much of the opinion that he should have won the Norfolk last year. I don't think he was overly happy with the ride the horse was given. I personally wouldn't have the same gripe to the extent that he did. If I'm misquoting that, I can only apologise, but I have a feeling that he wasn't overly pleased at the time. But I just think this horse is one of the most exciting sprinters in the globe right now, and I cannot wait to see him. I think the sprinters over here, while they might be good, this fella could just be different. So I'm, as you can probably tell, I am really, really excited to see what he can do. I'll be very disappointed if he gets beat.
Hey, we've got some disagreement there, but I like it. I like the confidence. Golden Pal, then it's got plenty of belief in him, hasn't he, Mark has. But let's see how that one pans out. It's certainly going to be an interesting contest. Even now, Batash has retired. Maybe we're going to see a new superstar in that race. We're going to take a really quick pause now, but don't go anywhere, because the highlight of the whole meeting, the Sky Bet eBall Handicap, is our next port of call, and we're going to get some selections for you.
Be sure to watch Racing Post Live with Betfair for racing reaction, tips and discussion, live every Saturday afternoon on the Racing Post YouTube channel.
It's Sky Bet eBall Handicap time now then. We're now on to Saturday in our preview of the week upcoming. And at 3:35 is the historic 1 mile 6 handicap. Last year, the race was won by a favourite in Fujera Prince. That's not been that common in recent years. We've had some really big price winners of this, including the likes Litigant at 33s in 2015, Mutual Regard the year before at 20s, and my own Kanish at 25-1 back in 2011. So if you're looking for a favourite, I think you've got to have quite a lot of confidence. Live Your Dream and Saldier are sharing favouritism with Sonny Boy Listen at the moment with some bookmakers. Which one of those would you be sweetest on, Mark, with your proximity to the Mullin stable? Do you get the indication he really wants Saldier to get in?
My only proximity to the Willie Mullins stable is that I live about an hour and a half away, I'd say. That's as close as my connection there gets. Jesus, not at all.
You're closer than me and James, that's all.
Yeah, I don't know, sure. But like, Saldier, his comments on a piece with David Jennings suggested that he very much would be keen on Saldier to get in. And that's no surprise either. He was very, very good at Galway. And he'd make obvious appeal as a candidate of Willie's. But actually, there's another one of Willie's, I think, that if you're asking me for a selection at a bit of a price, I think Tax for Max could be overpriced. You know, he unexposed over hurdles, but he has been a little bit frustrating over hurdles this summer. But I just think he's one of these types from Willie that is going to really appreciate getting back on the flat. We know how good Willie is in these big staying handicaps when there's a good purse on the table. And I just thought last time at Galway, there was a little bit more signs that he could have learned something. Like, he go back to his run in the Triumph, when there's a couple of whispers that he was seemingly held in quite decent regard going into that. And he was just crazy keen. But I actually thought he ran okay, considering he was keen. I know probably Houghton Colours was the one you'd really take from it as an eye catcher. I didn't think he was disgraced, Tax for Max, for all he was down the field. But you go back to his form in Germany. He has some good runs in a Group 2. He was midfield in a Group 1 on heavy ground. But he obviously is effective on a better surface too. So, look, it's a little bit of guesswork. We haven't got the final fields yet or the confirmations for it at this stage. So ultimately how the race takes shape, we'll know more in a couple of days time or later on this afternoon. But it's going to be a condensed race in terms of weights, we know that. And this guy, you know, if he was to relax over 1 mile 6, which I think there's more chance of him doing than over hurdles, you know, he could be one that's very, very interesting off his current market around 25-1. I'd be willing to take a flyer on him if things were looking in his favour on the day.
Indeed, I'll probably be crying shortly when Hamish doesn't get through the latest stage. He's my fancy for the race. What sort of mark roughly do you think you're going to want to be on to be guaranteed a run?
Oof, like, you're probably going to want to be right around the 105s, I'd say, at least. Anyway, I mean, I could be wrong. Like, I mean, you're probably 103 is Saldier, and they're hoping he might just get in. But I would imagine kind of 105, 104, 103. Who knows what exactly, but I'd say that's the sort of ballpark. I think you're unlikely probably if you're anywhere below 103.
Sounds good to me. Let's run you through some betting. So those three that I mentioned, Live Your Dream, Saldier, Sonny Boy Listen, 8-1. MC Muldoon, Mark mentioned him not getting in. He's 10-1 alongside Princess Zoe, who's going to be hoping the ground is in her favour. Then at 14-1, we have Away He Goes, Fujera Prince, last year's winner. My Fancy Hamish, Illarab. And then 16s, I'll read out a few. Burning Victory, Elysian Flame, Humanitarian, Mirren, Mr. Curiosity, Mount Leinster, Onto Victory, Outbox, Passion, Prince Alex, Quickthorne and Roberto Escobar, many, many more below, obviously. James, who's your pick?
Yeah, I think I'd go for one at a bigger price. I think Hamish is interesting, but like we say, it's fingers crossed time for you and other backers. Tribal Craft is the one I'm sort of drawn to. She's been absolutely different type of horse completely this year. She was previously quite a decent sort of listed type, but she's looked a lot better. She actually won the Group 3 race. I can't remember the name, but unfortunately, for fillies over the course and distance.
Bronte Cup.
Ah, good knowledge, good knowledge. Back early in the season, that was really impressive, albeit that was soft ground and what conditions would be like is hard to judge. And she followed that with a couple of starts later, finishing second to Wonderful Tonight in the Lily Langtry, which looks a really nice piece of form. She's going in there, I think £4 well in, given that run and the way the system worked. She's rated 104. She's 27th on the list. So it's a little bit of an um and ah whether she'll get in, but she looks like she'd stay this trip really well. You know, she's been arguably improving this season, and the way she sort of travels in those good races against good mares, I think that's going to work in her favour here. So she's quite a big price. She's improving, and I think she'd be worth an each-way punt for sure.
Super. There you are then. Some double-figure fancies for the Sky Bet Ebor on Saturday. Now let's get some naps. Who are you fancying most this week?
This will not be beaten.
Mark, I will go to you first.
Hardly a surprise. Golden Pal. Hope to God he does the business.
We're going to have a bit of a war of attrition on this one, aren't we? One of us is going to come out with egg on our face.
I'm well prepared for it. I'm very prepared for it. Like, I mean, you know me, I wouldn't generally be as, you know, outward as that in terms of fancy one, but I really, really think the world of them.
That's good. That's great. And James, what about you? Do you have as much confidence in your selection?
I certainly don't as much as Mark does. I'll be interested to see what he'll be like on Friday evening. Hopefully with a smile on his face, of course.
Myself and Wes could be in tears. You never know.
You never know in this game, do you, Mark? My main bet at York would be Mandoob, who we discussed before. I think great prize, improving. And there's a lot of uncertainty in that division. So definitely him at a really sort of eye-catching prize. But the best bet of the week would be in the 7 o'clock at Worcester on Wednesday. Can you believe it's been running well under big weights, and I'm hoping finally gets the big day on Wednesday.
It's typical for you to go for a jumper, isn't it?
The Worcester Wizard is at it again. My God.
There we are. Mind you, he does pull it off, so no complaints from...
Oh, no better man.
We've got
about
any jump racing, so I'm making the most of it.
No better man indeed. Thank you all for listening to us today. As usual, Bruce and the team be back on Saturday, so keep your eyes and ears peeled out for that one. Please rate, review and subscribe, and we'll see you again in a week's time. Best of luck at York.